Welcome to the Business Lunch Hour, starting off the Sarat and Marciano get-together today.
Hello there.
Joining us, as always, Terry Savage from terrysavage.com and financial advice everywhere. And this is the season. We're putting everything on our credit cards, and it's very appropriate that you've been writing about this, Terry.
Season that you have to beware of putting everything on your credit cards. And
I
don't want to start out like the Grinch, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. Right now, it's a little too late to get a new credit card. One of the things I do advise
What do you mean
you
by
do,
that? Late to get it before the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to start opening new credit accounts, but you also, the thing I most want to say about credit cards is you want to make sure nobody else is opening credit cards in your name. That's a one form of identity theft that booms around holiday season. Do you remember a few years back when every time you walked into a store, they said, would you like to get 10% off by opening a new credit card with us? They're not making those offers now because that's so easily hacked. You won't see a lot of that. And what I would suggest that you do right now is, number one, check online. Every credit card you have has a website. It may be connected with your bank account. For instance, if you have a Chase, Visa, or MasterCard, then you go to your account at Chase.com, which shows your checking or your savings or your IRAs, and then it also shows your credit cards. And I always do this once a week. I would suggest doing it twice a week.
But you just go randomly on your...
You go and sign in. Now, let's just say you have an account. Let me go back here. You have three credit cards in your wallet. One is a Chase Visa, one is a Capital One, and one is an American Express. They're in your wallet. Those are the cards you use, and the way you divide them up is maybe one you use for business and one you use for paying immediately the American Express and one you use for, it's got a low interest rate and I won't pay this off till January or February. If it's a card associated with your bank account, let's say your Chase Visa or MasterCard, you probably already go online, you should be, at Chase, because you're probably paying bills online, at least some bills, and not using paper checks.
I am. Bob is not.
Okay. Well, you should go online to your account, sign in with your password, look and check at your checking account balance, and also look, because linked to your checking account will be your Chase, Visa, or MasterCard.
Right, but that's how you can check on the cards that you
do have. Wait a minute. Okay. Same thing. Capital One's not affiliated with your bank account, but let's say you go to CapitalOne.com, using that as an example, or Discover.com, and you check and see what's going on in my Discover card. I used it at Target, or I used it at wherever it was. And you want to make sure that suddenly you look online and there isn't a balance of $4,286 when you know you only charged $112. You got to report those things absolutely immediately. Same thing with your American Express card.
So although when you get your statements, and I do look at those.
It's so late, Bob.
But aren't they...
Someone's out there, if your credit card identity is stolen, if your card number is stolen. Now, we're not talking about new cards. That's the next step. If your card is stolen, so yes, you're not held liable.
Right.
But it's going to be a huge hassle. Do yourself and your bank a favor, your card issuer a favor, by checking online once or twice a week to make sure the balance is what you think it should be. Now, to
not wait 30 days till
you get
the statement.
Not until you get your paper statement.
I look at it every day.
Yeah, okay, good.
Because it's only one bank.
It's only one place to look, and you should do that on a regular basis. Now, if you want to make sure that no one can open new credit in your name, then you go to the three major credit bureaus, and you can find them a direct link at annualcreditreport.com. That's the government-mandated free site. I know there are a lot of them that say free credit reports. Annualcreditreport.com. If you go there, you get links to the three major credit bureau reporters, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. And they will allow you to put a freeze on. If you're not out shopping this month to buy a new car, if you're not buying a new life insurance policy, those are the things where they check your credit report, then you might as well put a freeze on your credit that says nobody else can open an account. Nobody can, even the legitimate ones. You might forget about it, you know, but and then you'll have to go and unfreeze it, and only you can do that. And it'll cost you $35, $45 unless you've been recently hacked. So it's worth it, though. If you're not out acquiring new credit, just put a freeze on your credit report saying no one can acquire new credit in my name. And again, everybody's saying, what was that website?
How long does it last?
Annualcreditreport.com.
How long does the freeze last?
You can renew it. Typically,
so is it
six
months or
six
a year?
Months? Yeah. 6 months. But they let you automatically extend it as long as you are not. Think about who checks your credit report that might upset you. All right, you're going to sign for a new apartment. They're going to check your credit report. You're going to apply.
Do you have to unfreeze it then?
Yeah, sure. But if you're, you might not think about all the times people check your credit report legitimately. You apply for a new job. One of the first things I've got news for you they do is check your credit report. You apply for a new auto insurance policy. Forget buying a car. Of course, they'll check your credit report. But your insurance, life insurance. There are legitimate reasons for real credit grantors or people who want to know more about you to be checking your credit. So that's why you don't want to freeze it if you're in the midst of buying a car, buying a house, or something like that. But if you're just, you know, you've had these three credit cards that are, you're saying are sitting in your pocket, there's no reason, as long as you're not applying for new credit to, or something like that, to not freeze your account. And that's important to think about this holiday season. Check every day or check at least twice a week on your balances. You are protected. But think about it. We all pay for fraud in the price of things we pay, because when merchants write off the bad debt that they promise, if your Visa card, you have a 100% zero liability, if they promise things like that, then who pays in the end? They write it off? Well, they write it off, and it costs more on everything we buy.
All right. And when we come back from our break, I want to hear from you about the best cards to have in terms of rewards, maximizing your rewards.
Okay.
You've written about this on your site. But my question is, and I'm always struggling with this, is it better to have a credit card that gives you back? For example, I have an offer. We'll give you 2% back on all your purchases. Is that better than getting, for example, airline miles?
It all depends on whether you're anxious to travel.
If you're anxious
you're
to travel.
To buy more. You know, it's all your personal preferences. Let's talk about that.
More in a moment with Terry Savage. And time permitting, you can ask Terry a question about
let's do that.
Finances. 312-981-7200. Back with Terry Savage. And by the way, her book is still out there and available, The Savage Truth on Money. Want to go to the phones first, see what people have on their minds, Terry?
Yeah, let's do a quick check of the markets.
Yeah, how's the market doing right now?
Dow's up 15 points to 17,894. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about, will it make 18,000? Yeah, it looks like that's going to happen. Interesting, oil has bounced just a little bit. Oil was over $100 a barrel just 7 months ago, 6 months ago. It's now $67.40. That's actually up a little bit. But we've seen the benefits in lower gasoline prices, which helps consumer shopping.
We're happy.
And gold, amazingly, gold collapsed just a couple of days ago when oil prices did. But gold has bounced back, and it's up another almost $11 today to $1,210 an ounce. Just thought I'd give you an update.
Camille, you've been holding on a while for Terry Savage. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering why you haven't mentioned, Terry, about the text alert that Chase puts out for when somebody charges on your credit card. Because I was compromised about 2 weeks ago, and I was out, and my phone went off. I checked the text, and it was a charge that went through for a company that I did not know. I immediately called them. They tracked it down. And they said it was a charge that came from Venezuela, and they immediately credited my credit card for the dollar amount. And then, of course, I had to go through Chase and get a new credit card because...
Isn't that fabulous? The banks now are, of course, they have a lot to lose, too. So they have these algorithms, which, you know, if I regularly shop near Michigan Avenue in Chicago, or if I live in Oak Brook or Niles or wherever, and you regularly shop in the Chicago suburbs, they're not going to be so surprised if one day you go out and buy a big screen TV. But if there's a large charge from an unknown merchant...
From Venezuela.
Well, then I'm sure they didn't know it was Venezuela at the time because they wouldn't know that. But their algorithms say, wait, something's out of whack in Camille's account. They get you right away. So, yeah, the banks have the most to lose. You know, you don't have anything to lose. You have that guarantee. And they will quickly change your credit card.
Same thing happened to my...
This alert that I get on my phone is every charge that I put through on my Chase credit card, my Visa. I can go to get my hair done, and before the card is through the machine, my phone goes off to tell me that my hair charge was just put on my credit card.
That's a very good thing. Thanks for the call, Camille, and enjoy your next trip to Venezuela, by the way. Hi, Steve. You're on with Terry Savage.
Hey, Terry. How are you?
Hi.
Quick question. Does it cost anything to put my credit on with a freeze, or does it only cost when you unfreeze it?
No, actually, you'll have to check with the different bureaus, but some of them charge $35, $25 to freeze your credit, and then they don't typically charge to unfreeze it. But check the terms of it. Now, if you have been victimized by fraud in the last, I believe it's 6 months, but maybe it's 90 days. I think it's 6 months. Then there is no charge for putting a freeze on your, but you have to have filed a fraudulent credit card report and so forth.
Terry,
it's still worth it.
Thanks.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Steve.
Here's a text question that just came in. Is it safe to check credit rating online? They ask for Social Security.
Yeah, I know this is scary because we tell you don't ever do this. But if you go through a legitimate site, and that is why I send you to annualcreditreport.com, which has links to the three bureaus, which does not require you to buy a credit management service or an alert service or a protection service. You can do that if you want. Yes, it is safe. And it's interesting because, well, Bob and Marianne, you know each other pretty well. But I'm going to make you bet, and we'll do this after the show, or maybe tomorrow when we're getting together.
Sounds like we're getting into a game show here.
I'm going to bet that you could not get Bob's credit report as well as intimately as you know him, being married to him. I'm going to bet that if we went online, and even if you knew his Social Security number, you would not be able to get his credit report. They ask you things that go into your past about, did you ever own a 1992 Honda Accord or a Chevy Tahoe or whatever it might be. And so it's very personal, and it is safe to get your credit report online, but go through one of the websites that's legit, and the government-mandated one is annualcreditreport.com.
That's good. I feel more secure now knowing Marianne is not privy to my personal information. Betty, your turn. Go ahead.
I just wondered, about having credit cards, like consolidating credit cards. Okay, you've got three credit cards. You've got kind of medium, high balances on them. You get these letters all the time that say, we will take your, you know, we'll consolidate it for less money. Are these scams or is there a good way to do that?
Let me tell you what typically happens. They'll give you 6 months, no interest, 0% interest, transfer your balance. And then in the fine print, let's say you're currently paying 19.8% interest, and don't laugh because a lot of people are. That's about the average rate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then 6 months, if you haven't paid down that balance, the whole thing might jump up to 29-point-something%. So you have to be very careful. I'll give you a couple of websites where you can check out what the best offers are for consolidating. But again, you have to find out what the highest possible rate they could jump to. But the best place probably is bankrate.com, BANKRATE.com. And there's a bunch of links at terrysavage.com to the best places to check. But again, that's the hidden thing. They really are going to give you 0% for a while. And then you could wind up paying a higher rate on your entire balance.
Thanks for that question, Betty, because we've all wondered about that.
Yes.
And it's terrysavage.com for more on anything we're talking about, and then some. Thanks, as always, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Fun to be with you.
Talk to you next week.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN with Bob Surratt and Marianne Marciano.
Time for hashtags, likes, shares, and Scott Kleinberg, who writes the Tribune So Social column, which is syndicated nationally, isn't it, Scott?
It is, yes.
You're famous everywhere.
So they tell me, but
especially in your own home.
Well, yes, but I'm a lot more famous when I come here, thanks to you guys.
So I thought you were going
to
say in your own mind. And what famous people are folks buzzing about, or what topics are out there on social media at the moment that
you
like?
Well, you know, there's two things that are jumping out. There's new features that Twitter has started rolling out. One is a better way to report if you're being harassed on Twitter. It's like a way to manage all your blocked people, which is actually really cool. And they're adding photo filters to the iPhone app. So these are things that roll out super slowly. They usually test it with a very small group of people, but it's clear that these are going to be eventual permanent features, and it's getting a lot of buzz.
So what, photo filters?
Just like Instagram.
Oh, so that when you post it, you can post it with some kind of an effect?
Yes, you can do that. Now you can't do that through Twitter without going back into a third-party program and doing something, but this will let you do it right in the app before you post your tweet.
And Google Glass, this keeps coming up, and we talk about this all the time, and every time it does come up, I think, is this something that is still like 10 years away, really, practically speaking?
You know, I think it is. And the thing that's crazy about this is everybody in the past 2 weeks has said this is the end of Google Glass. They're going to get
the
rid
end?
Of it. The end of it, totally.
Yes.
They're going to get rid of it, and there's been reports
because
saying that it was gone.
Because of the competition with smartwatches, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we had our friend in from Google talking about how much better, like, the smartwatches are selling.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the Apple Watch is going to be coming out.
Right.
I can't wait to get one of those, so I'm totally on,
yeah,
on board
Apple
with that.
Yeah, the Apple Watch. And it's not going to replace Google Glass?
No, I don't know that it'll replace it. I think they do different things, but I think you have to be a really hardcore person to want to wear this glass on your face and, like, just have everything in front of you all the time, because it's basically a screen attached to your head. But what this means right now is they're replacing the chip. So it's powered now by a Texas Instruments chip. They're going to power it, according to the Wall Street Journal, by an Intel chip, which means it's going to be that much more powerful and do that much more. That tells me that it can be lighter, it can be thinner, it can be smaller. So for everybody knows that when you buy an iPhone or something, they change all the time. That's part of life. But if you pay $1,500 for Google Glass and then all of a sudden now it's lighter and newer and cheaper, you know, it's an expensive process.
Well, they did that. Apple did that many years ago with the computers. I mean,
yes,
they went to the Intel processors or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And everything that I remember, I had just bought a computer right before that, and it was pretty much useless.
Well, exactly. Nobody knew before then that there was a time where you would say, well, your computer is no longer practical, so you have to buy a new one. It was like, wait a minute, I have to buy a new one. And now that happens with everything.
And this had to happen sooner or later. I see that you're writing about high-tech pizza, Scott. What is that all
I have
about?
This thing figured out. This is crazy. So Pizza Hut is employing this eye-tracking software. So when you're on their website, based on how long you look at a topping, it's going to say to you that's the topping you want. So it's going to be able to suggest your pizza. But here's what I have figured out. The average person who goes on the site...
Why is that a surprise? If I'm looking at a topping, it's going to tell me, oh, that's the topping
it's
you like?
It's going to say, well, obviously you like pepperoni because you're looking at pepperoni for 2 minutes versus you're looking at anchovies for 2 seconds, because you would never, you know, well, I would never want a pizza with anchovies on it. But I think this is something different. They're introducing all these new kinds of pizzas and crust and toppings, and I think they're going to make it so because you're going to be staring at those the longest, they're going to be able to sell more of these new pizzas by saying, oh, well, you're looking at sriracha for 3 minutes, which you normally wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what is behind it, which either way, it's pretty genius. If I'm at the point where I'm sitting there and I need someone to pick my pizza for me, I think I have other issues to deal with.
Yeah, I think so. There's also some coffee story trending, and this has to do with how you drink your coffee or what you drink it in.
You drink it in. I tested this at home because I was so fascinated by this. The study says that if you use a white cup for your coffee, the coffee tastes more bitter, or it's perceived to taste more bitter than if you put it in a clear cup. It's because the white really plays off the color of coffee. The coffee looks more brown, and brown is associated with bitter. But clear cups had an opposite effect. So I tried this at home. We have these great white cups and these great clear cups, and it tasted exactly the same to me. So I don't know what these people are doing.
And what about other colors? That doesn't have anything to do with
it? They didn't mention other colors except for the fact that they said that the clear cup was always the one that tasted sweeter. So there's obviously something
but
to do
the cups,
with the perception of color.
All the cups that you get, for example, at a Starbucks, they're
yes,
all white.
They're all white, yes. So I don't know, but people always say Starbucks coffee tastes bitter. So I don't know if there's some sort of association with that. I mean, it was just such a crazy thing to say that clear would make such a big difference. And, you know, I just can't. I can't see it. And I drink so much coffee, I feel like I really know this stuff.
By the way, I really enjoyed your Thanksgiving Week column on the social media related things you were thankful for.
Thanks.
And I had heard of most of them, I think, except Buffer. Explain what Buffer is.
Buffer is my favorite thing in the world. Buffer is this place where you put all of your tweets or Facebook posts or Google Plus posts, and it gives a time for each thing. So you say, I want to send out 10 tweets Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at these times. And you put them in, you hit the button, and it automatically puts them in, schedules times based on how your Twitter and Facebook accounts have done in the past in terms of analytics, and makes these times for you. And you can adjust them all you want. But this way you can say, I just know that I want to send 10 tweets over this period of time. Do it for me.
Oh, and it does it for you. Decides when is the best time?
It decides when is the best time based on your previous practice.
Twitter only?
It works on Twitter. You can do it on Facebook and Google Plus, but I find that the analytics work best on Twitter.
And what about Instagram?
I use it most for Twitter. It does not work for Instagram, at least not yet.
So it's an app?
It is a website and an app. That's the beautiful thing. So when you're using it on the website, you make a change, it automatically appears on your iPhone or Android,
and you can
vice
do it
versa.
From your phone.
You can do it either way, from your phone or from your desktop.
This is a huge topic in our house, Bob, because our daughter, who posts things on Instagram, she is always struggling with which is the best time. Like, she wants to make sure.
Well, is that why she's not doing her homework?
Exactly. Yeah.
Buffer. Interesting. Scott Kleinberg.
Very cool thing.
It's the social column in the Tribune. And I noticed that at the end of the column, you say if you have questions about social media, you can tweet them.
Yep.
At Scott Kleinberg with the hashtag
So social.
That's it, right?
Yep.
And you can use those questions in the column or on the radio here, right?
Absolutely. And if I see something that I can write something about, I will be happy to do that or talk about it here for sure.
Well, is this a good time? Because I have a picture of you bowling right before you scored a strike.
Roll the strike, as we bowlers say.
Whatever. What did I say?
Scored a strike.
Rolled a strike. And I was going to put it up. Should I put it up on our Twitter and our Facebook page now? Is this a good time?
Yeah, sure.
It sounds like any time would be a good time for that photo.
You got that. Talk to you later. Thanks
guys.
Very interesting new survey from creditcards.com. This is about impulse purchases, which are defined as any unplanned or unnecessary decision to buy a product just before the purchase. And it's mostly millennials saying they've made impulse purchases recently. And the survey found some real differences among Americans when it comes to what triggers those purchases, how much we spend, and whether we end up regretting them. And here to talk about it from creditcards.com, senior industry analyst Matt Schultz. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Very interested in this report, and we mentioned this when we were talking about it yesterday, saying that we were going to deal with this today, that men in this survey were nearly three times more likely than women to impulse buy while intoxicated. Really?
Yeah.
We're drunk when we shop?
That was the number that jumped out at us too, and as well as the fact that women were twice as likely as men to impulse buy while they were sad. So I thought that those were two interesting numbers.
What about when they're mad? I think that I know about a lot of those women.
Well, it's funny. Men and women were about the same when it comes to buying when they're angry. But actually, the younger you are, the more likely to have said that you had impulse bought while you were angry.
I'm not clear on what exactly constitutes impulse buying, because it's all right. So if I go shopping and I don't know what I'm going to find, and then I end up buying something unexpected, is that impulse buying?
Yeah, we actually cast a pretty wide net with that. I mean, it could be anything from, buying something at the checkout counter to, buying a TV or a computer. It was basically anything that you didn't need and that you hadn't planned to buy, and then you made a decision about it just right at that time.
The emotions, though, that came up more often than any other in the survey, shopping while excited and also impulse buying while bored. Those were the big two, correct?
Correct. And it was interesting. While women were a little more likely to have bought when they were excited and also when they were bored as well, But what we found with Board was that millennials are the most likely to have said that they bought while they were bored, and that number, that likelihood decreased with age.
And is there a difference between impulse buying when you are at the stores and just sitting there in front of your computer in the middle of the night and just clicking and buying?
You know, it's funny. We asked about that, and it turns out that there wasn't one. And we kind of felt like there might be more of a tendency when you're online, for example, but it turned out that it was about the same.
And you surveyed, what was it, 1,000 men and women?
Correct.
It's very interesting, especially this time of year, to think about this. And how much is spent on impulse buying? Have we ever sort of discerned how much money is changing hands through impulse buying?
No, I've seen estimates that have said, you know, that, you know, depending on where you are and what type of shopping you're doing, as many as like 60% of purchases are made on impulse. But we didn't really look at that particular stat in this survey.
And I know, in spite of the fact that Marianne stops and looks in the windows of many jewelry stores, that men are the biggest spenders in impulse buying, aren't they?
Yeah, and this was one that surprised us as well. We found that that nearly one in three Americans had spent $100 or more on an impulse purchase, but men were three times more likely than women to have spent $1,000 or more. So that's a lot of money.
Yeah, we're buying gifts for our women, though.
There you go.
All right, so there's men are spending $1,000 or more impulse shopping, and they're doing it when they're drunk. So where are they? I'm confused. Like, are they at a bar and then they're leaving the bar and going shopping? Is that how it's happening? Or are they just drinking, you know, as they're walking around?
Yeah,
how does that work?
Were you calling bars when you took the survey, Matt?
No, I don't think they were calling bars, but you're right. It is an interesting combination. Yeah, you haven't walked out of too many bars with the opportunity to drop $1,000 someplace. So I'm not exactly sure how that's working out.
Well, maybe they're going out to eat and then having a cocktail and then shopping. Creditcards.com, one of the good sites for managing your credit. And our thanks to senior industry analyst Matt Schultz for the info on a pretty interesting survey about impulse purchasing. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Every time I hear the story about the new appointment by the president of Ashton Carter, and I think it's Ashton Kutcher.
I thought the same exact thing when I saw that come through last night.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, Ashton Kutcher, what?
Mm-hmm.
But it's
good,
a C, not
make
a K.
A good Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Hope everybody's doing well. It's middle of the week here, Wednesday, December 3rd. At least we have some sunshine, not much heat, but it's bright out there. And yesterday we were talking about Van Halen and the famous rider in the contract stipulating that brown M&Ms were to be banished from the band's dressing room. And then it comes out now that they knew what they were doing. They weren't just being jerky. They used that as a way to determine if promoters actually read all of their rider. If brown M&Ms were in the backstage candy bowl, Van Halen surmised that more important aspects of a performance, lighting, staging, security, ticketing, and so forth, may have been botched by an inattentive promoter.
And was it just Van Halen, or do other people, other groups do this?
I don't know if they did that.
I think it's a good
that.
Trick.
I'm not sure, but everybody always talked about the M&Ms and Van Halen. By the way, do you know what else was in their contract?
No.
Among their demands, it was 53 pages long. So
their demands? So well, the whole contract.
So it was good that that they put the M&M's thing in there to make sure everything was read. Herring and sour cream, 4 cases of 16-ounce cans of Schlitz, 8 bottles of wine and liquor, a large tube of KY jelly, don't ask, please, and the M&M's. And then in parentheses, it said in the contract, warning, absolutely no brown ones. Now, today in the Tribune, I'm reading this story out of Washington about some internal communications obtained and published by the Washington Post about Hillary Clinton's requirements when she goes out on a book tour, for example, or gives speeches. Want to hear what she requires?
Yeah, and I'm glad, by the way, to hear that Van Halen is doing this, because usually you read stories about the diva demands. And, you know, what does J-Lo want in her dressing room? Everything's got to be white. Or other demands that female singers have.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what Hillary wants. A case of room temperature water, still only, no bubbles. A computer, mouse, and printer, as well as a scanner. A lavalier microphone. Chairs with 2 long rectangular pillows. A carafe of warm or hot water. A coffee cup. And a saucer, a pitcher of room temperature water, a water glass, and lemon wedges. And she wants that on stage as well as in a VIP meet and greet room.
I mean, everything seems reasonable except the chairs with the long pillows. What was that all about?
Maybe it's just something that makes her comfy. Diet ginger ale and a platter of crudites.
Crudites? Like little...
Crudite.
Oh, crudite. Oh, sorry.
What is
wow.
that? What
That's,
is that?
I think those are little sandwiches, right?
Little vegetables chopped up.
Oh.
You know what?
I am so out of
it. I was absent that day in home economics in high school when they went over that. Crudites.
All right. Crudites.
She wants that and hummus in the green room. And let's see. What else? I think that's about it.
I'm disappointed that she drinks diet ginger ale.
Well, it's not healthy for you.
No.
Yeah. You know? You're better off having the real thing than one of those diet drinks. Okay, how does that compare to some rock acts besides Van Halen? Want to hear about Coldplay's Rider?
Yes.
Let's see here. In their contract, they have this written in all caps. Cold, strong, continental lagers. Must be Beck's or equivalent, not Stella and not U.S. beers. Also listed are 60 bath-sized towels, access to at least 4 hot showers all day long, and a selection of nibbles. That's what the Brits call, you know, little appetizers and snacks. How about the Rolling Stones? This was obtained by the Smoking Gun during their tour in 2005. They asked for separate dressing rooms for the band members, and each of them had individual requests and requirements. For Mick Jagger, those included a phone line, a high-speed internet connection, 4 folding gig chairs, 4 separate electrical circuits, 2 6-foot banquet tables, and a TV with a satellite or cable hookup, along with a related request that said, please find out what channel is showing cricket. That is the channel we need most of all. And the writer also included a request for a second area backstage to be set aside just for Mick Jagger. And the writer read, the running area should be a private area, approximately 25 to 30 feet long and 10 feet wide. A quiet area not far from the dressing room is ideal. Occasionally, the promoter will need to provide non-see-through pipe and drape for this area. And there was also a request for a separate room for snooker. Did you ever play snooker? Not in this country.
No.
They actually traveled. The Stones actually traveled with their own snooker table. So that wasn't hard for the promoters to provide.
Huh. Hey, you know what? I just found this information online about. Want to hear some of Justin Bieber's demands? Wait, you got to hear this.
A BB gun.
All right,
to shoot at small animals.
This is okay. He wants herbal tea, deli meats, veggies, Swedish fish, and Ritz bits in both cheese and peanut butter varieties. And this must have been when he and Selena were not dating anymore, because absolutely no Selena Gomez music. All right. And also no speaking directly to Justin Bieber.
You can't speak to him.
Can't speak to him. Uh-huh. And then I have a good one here from Mariah Carey. All right. So according to her contract writer that was obtained by the Smoking Gun, she demands chilled crystal, two dozen white roses, and dark colored couches without busy patterns for her dressing room. And then there was this rumored 2009 demand for 20 white kittens and 100 white doves to be released while she turned on Christmas lights at Westfield London Shopping Center. The demand could not be met due to health hazards, but Westfield was able to accommodate her request to roll out the pink carpet for her and then shower the crowd with pink and white butterfly-shaped confetti.
That gives me an idea. I'm going to request anytime I do a personal appearance that a cute kitten, be put in my backstage dressing room, because it'll lower your blood pressure, you know, makes you feel good. You know, it'd be nice to have. It'd calm you down.
But not around me, because you know me, I'm allergic to cats.
Right. Well, and that would ensure that I'd be
that
alone.
I don't go.
By the way, do you know how much Hillary Clinton gets for making a personal appearance for a speech?
No, how much?
$300,000.
Every time she does that.
And that's the special university rate.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What's our rate, Bob? Are we...
a little shy of that. let's see. Mary was listening closely a few minutes ago. Too closely. Are you going to make fun of me now?
Yes.
And me?
No, not you. But, Bob, I cannot let you get away with cruddites. That is one of the funniest. I kind of mentally collect, mispronounced words. But come on.
I don't think I've ever used the word crudité or heard it before now. Well, actually, you know, I have heard it, but I've not used it.
That's not, I don't know. I was just sitting here and I heard that and I thought, this is one of the funniest mispronounced words I'd ever heard, because it sounded just like Luddite.
Yeah, or crudite. I've done worse, but that was a pretty good one.
But that is, I mean, if you were reading it in English and not in French, that is how you would pronounce it.
Right.
Yes.
If you're a rube like me.
And I'm sure I didn't learn it off of any spelling list in junior high, but it's just you are pretty sophisticated, and you've been around and you've gone places and stuff like that. And I think of you guys as relatively worldly. And
not anymore.
No, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we've been to France a couple of times. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, oh wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. It doesn't sound right.
I dare you to say that in a restaurant in Chicago.
I don't want to say crudite, but crude. Well, just to show you, Mary, that
you
there's
got it in front of you. I was just listening and thinking crudite, and then
all right, Mary, that's enough. Just to show you that there's no hard feelings, Mary. Mary.
Yeah.
You got to let me talk, because I'm going to give you the Genucel holiday package from Chamonix worth more than $350, just to show you
that
I'm a good sport. Take yours off your appearance. Get rid of the bags and puffiness under your eyes with the special Genucel. You'll get rid of them. A special holiday package. You get a 2-month supply of Genucel and Genucel Immediate Effects, Esotique anti-wrinkle moisturizers, and a travel size L'Essence neck treatment. Hey, did you like that? L'Essence. I could have said L'Essence, but I didn't.
Any crudités I've ever had.
It's the perfect gift idea this holiday season, or even a special treat for yourself. Congratulations, Mary.
That is some gift.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, hang on, and we'll get all the information.
Yes, I forgive you, and I won't even tell anybody that what I heard you say.
All right, call us again when I say something properly, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Hold on now.
I was a teacher. What can I say?
What did you say?
She was a teacher.
I was a teacher.
Oh, really? English?
No, actually, music.
Oh, no kidding. In high school?
No, elementary, K-5.
Oh, I bet the little kids knew how to say crudité. Hold on, Mary.
I'm sure we should have had a concert over them.
On the page, facebook.com/Serrato and Marciano, there is currently a, what was the movie? Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski.
Yeah, there's currently a picture there that'll remind you of that movie.
We were talking earlier about when is the best time to post something, because there's a new app that does some analytics and it supposedly tells you, just posts things for you on Twitter and I think on Facebook as well, and it posts it at the exact right time. So we were asking Scott Kleinberg earlier, what's the best time to post a picture of Bob Bowling? So I figured I'll post it now. Let's see. If it gets
it's
seen
in keeping with my new image as a rube. You know, I'm a guy who just goes, hangs out at the bowling alley and does not speak French.
And so the question is, did you strike? You got a double strike when you, didn't you?
That'd be a double.
A double.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You didn't get a turkey. You got
no,
a double.
That's correct. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So was this picture that's on Facebook.com/Serrato and Marciano?
I don't know.
Is that, do you know?
I don't remember.
Well, I caught you in action on my, iPhone.
I have not been able to bowl well since my old bowling alley in my old neighborhood in Albany Park closed down, Rollaway. And they had a ball there that I used. I still remember. It was the number 512. And I bowled well when I had the 512 ball. Now, what happened to that ball when they tore down the bowling alley?
I thought you had a bowling ball.
Well, it's my dad's, but I can't lift it. He was serious. I think he used a 16-pounder.
I think that's as high as you can go, right? 16 pounds?
I can't bowl with a ball as heavy as that.
Do your fingers fit in it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's in the bag, and you know, he was. I've got his bowling shirt. He was.
Well, you should at least wear that.
I think he bowled. I think his high game, I think he rolled a 290 one time. So he was pretty good. Glorious results of a misspent youth hanging out in bowling alleys and pool rooms.
Well, I'm not sure if you actually, what is it? Rolled a strike, scored. Well,
judging by my form,
I don't know.
Probably didn't. Probably left a split. I was watching. A couple weeks ago, I guess it was, Letterman had Jennifer Lawrence on, and I don't know how they got around to it, but they started talking about bowling and the 7-10 split, and apparently Letterman spent an afternoon in the office just watching video, YouTube or someplace online, of just 7-10 splits. And I always thought the only way to pick that up...
I don't know what that means.
That's the one nobody can get, because you've got on one end the 7-pin and on one end the 10-pin, and it's impossible to pick up. But I saw a clip
where...
No, you can do it. I saw a clip where one guy did it, and I thought you needed to kind of clip the pin on the outside, and then it might slide over and get the other one. But this guy picked it up by actually hitting the pin... I think the 7-pin on the inside, and he had a fast ball, I guess, and the pin ricocheted off of the wall or whatever that is down there and slid back into the 10-pin,
and
he picked it up.
Because he was probably putting spin on it, which is my goal in life, is to be able to bowl with spin.
It's not just spin. I know you're obsessed with
spin
that.
And speed. Speed and spin. That's what I want. I want speed.
You just got to control where your ball goes if you aim it right. That's what my dad used to say. He used to say when I'd bowl and it wouldn't hit the head pin, he'd say, "Well, the ball went exactly where you aimed it, exactly where your arm was moving." He didn't talk about spin. Although
you weren't old enough for him to talk about spin yet.
Yes, he said to me, "Little Bobby, when you're old enough, I'll tell you all about spin on the bowling ball." Sir Rodden Marciano with you in the afternoon, and we're joined by Roosevelt University Professor Paul Green. Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan says he will not be calling for a vote this week on a bill that would raise the statewide minimum wage. Everybody's still talking about this, aren't they?
Oh, in Springfield, absolutely, and they're probably talking about it in City Hall. The issue, and this may come as a shock to everybody, is basically more political than it is economic. Because what the city did yesterday, I think it was yesterday, after what happened to me yesterday, I'm not so sure, but this week, they...
Well, now you got to explain.
I had a little... Yeah. What did my daughter
say? Procedure.
A procedure done.
Butts up, as she calls it. Don't ask. That's all why right. Daughters are great. They can tell dad things.
Everything came out well in the
yes,
end.
Yes, it did. And I was flying high for
is what
hours.
You had.
All right. Anyways, the city wants to go up to $13 by mid-2019. The state is going to go to $13. And $11 somewhere earlier. The issue is that many of Madigan state reps who are Democrats do not, from Chicago, especially African Americans, do not want to vote for a minimum wage that tops out at 11 when the aldermen and supporters in the city are going for 13, because it would just be a terrible issue in the upcoming primary, which, by the way, takes place in March of 2016. So what you have, in effect, is Madigan saying, or his spokesman saying, complications have arisen. Basically what Chicago did yesterday. On the other hand, Mayor Emanuel is facing a campaign for re-election. He's facing two people who call themselves progressives, who want to raise it even higher. So he had to up the ante and do it quickly to go on record that he's for a higher minimum wage in the state. Bottom line, the state's not going to do anything.
We had a bit of a debate here yesterday. We had Alderman Bob Fioretti and Alderman Brendan Riley. Alderman Riley was one of five, I think, right, who voted against. And Alderman Fioretti was talking about this. So the way I understand it, then, he was not happy because he thought it should have been higher.
The city should have been higher. Even though it's higher than the state, he said it should be higher. The reality is the economics of it, is a debate which goes back to my undergraduate days. If you raise the minimum wage, does that cost jobs?
That's the big question.
That's the real question. Do people move? The lady on the O'Connor of Waldeman, the 41st ward, and Shea on the 19th ward on the borders of the city, will they lose businesses who will simply pick up and move across the boundary?
It just seems like those wages are so they're so low anyway.
Right.
No matter what. I mean,
even with the raise,
it's just so low.
Right.
Well,
you want to help
low-income folks. And on the other hand, with all the talk about businesses moving out of our state because they can't compete, you don't want to push city businesses to the limit either.
And the number, and I'm not sure, I think this is correct, that this raising the minimum wage in Chicago alone would affect 400,000 people. I mean, there's so many people earning that kind of wage. It's a terribly tough issue.
Sad.
Conservative economists say these minimum wage jobs are basically your first job, your stepping stone. But given our economy and the role of education and class, for many of these people, this is their only job.
So yesterday was a victory for Mayor Emanuel.
Yes, he got his thing. It gave him a position that they can't really attack him very hard on the left, Mr. Fioretti or Mr. Garcia, because he is above what the state would have done. And so he could argue that point and take away one of the so-called issues that will be used against him. Absolutely.
And the mayor officially kicks off his campaign on Saturday. He said, or his people said, it will be a celebratory event to energize our volunteers and supporters, and for the mayor to lay out his vision to continue creating jobs, improving on the record graduation rate,
yes,
and making the tough choices to build a brighter future for every Chicagoan.
Yes, and I'm sure he'll be pushing his – we've had him at the City Club, and we had Cheryl Hyman, who runs the City Colleges. He'll be pushing his whole role with it to City Colleges, and she made a commercial for him, African-American woman, and they'll be talking about that. But political strategy says that if you're in front, and certainly financially he's way in front.
Yeah, 9 million. He's getting like 400,000 more, right. I think, or he just got 400,000
right.
more
and,
recently.
And more to come. We could talk about that in a second. But in a campaign, if you're the leader, you want to go for the first round knockout. You want to just knock it out right off the bat, intimidate people who might be thinking of supporting one of your opponents. You want to be basically, there's no doubt that you're going to win. To quote Richard Nixon, the train is leaving. Do you want to get on board or you want to stay at the station? That's basically the psychology or the philosophy about the big opening shout out.
I was reading about how things are winding up for the presidential, election. Mm-hmm. And Hillary Clinton's camp is coming out again saying that they are increasingly worried about the threat posed by all these Democratic presidential hopefuls who are probably not going to get enough votes to win anything, but they're posing a threat to the Democratic Party.
Well, you mean the people on the left? Because
yes.
She's going to have a challenge on the left. I mean, right now the polls suggest that she is so far in the lead. The reality is someone's going to challenge her from the left. She has done a remarkable job of staying in the news without doing anything.
Right. She hasn't said she's running.
Don't want to do too early because, you have to keep some excitement there and you have to keep some interest in her. I mean, what's she going to do? Start campaigning in 2014 when the first primary will be in February 2016. So she's kept her news in the paper. She's made a few mistakes on some of her speeches. But by and large, she has still basically blocked any major opponent from entering the arena.
What do you mean she's blocked?
Because her strong, ready for Hillary, she's doing what Emanuel is going to try and do, is to make it so inevitable that she's going to get the nomination that it would be fruitless to run against her. So you may have this fellow O'Malley from Maryland who took a great blow that his guy, governor of Maryland, he's now out of office. His lieutenant governor lost, and so they're using that against him. Elizabeth Warren just seems to be everyone's favorite on the left, but she doesn't, I don't think, has the gravitas to, but who knows? Look what Obama did. So there really isn't anybody on the left compared to what the Republicans are going to have. They're going to have basically a stampede. And
right.
The Democrat, it's going to be a match race.
Hmm. And so all this talk about being a grandmother and all that
keeps the name out there, non-threatening, and basically, what are you going to attack grandmas? I mean,
exactly. You're not going to attack a grandma.
No. So she has that going for her. And the fact is that when she goes someplace, she draws the crowd. People say, well, she makes X amount of dollars because of her fee is. Of course, someone who speaks for a lot less, I find that interesting.
Yeah, well, her fee we were just talking about, what is it, like $300,000 minimum.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I once said to somebody who had her, I would go for a slight percentage of that.
Wouldn't we all?
A slight percentage.
I know,
Before you go, Paul, now, today is the final day for people to file objections to the campaign signature for the mayoral elections?
I think so. I haven't checked that. I was looking at something else. Yeah, if in fact there's going to be challenges that there are 10 candidates, there are 7 who nobody knows and probably will never know. But if the mayor wants to knock him off, look for the presence of a fellow named Mike Casper. He was the lawyer who defended him on the residency rule.
So we're not sure which petitions the mayor might challenge, but today would be the day we'd hear about it.
Yes, and it won't be Garcia, and it won't be Fioretti, but it'll be those lesser candidates. If he thinks it's in his interest to do that, Mike Casper is the best election lawyer in the city, if not the state. When your main client is Speaker Madigan, that means you probably are doing pretty good.
Well, if there are going to be some Chicago political hardball tactics, Rahm Emanuel is not a guy to shy away from that.
Well, real quickly, the biggest story on his race, besides the minimum wage deal and him kicking off on Saturday, is that this fellow named William Kelly, the alleged Republican running, remember, our races for mayor are nonpartisan, said he gave himself a $100,000 check by doing that, and he filed that with the election, with the state, which means that all limits are off. And so his brother in California could get those well-known Chicagoans like Steven Spielberg and all those Hollywood types. They can give as much as they want. And so Emmanuel's at $9 million. He could double that.
Rahm's brother's clients, those folks.
Yeah, the...
Yes. The George Lucas group.
Well, George. Yeah. I mean, and again, if some people, oh, that's terrible, unless you're the candidate who they're giving all that money to, then it's called democracy and free speech.
Exactly.
And a good idea. And it's Professor Paul Green. As always, thank you, Paul. We'll
Thanks,
talk to
Paul.
You next week.
See you guys.
What do you call those things that are like licorice, but it's not licorice? They're red Twizzlers. Is that what it is?
Yeah. The corn syrup sticks.
Yeah, exactly. Marianne's on a corn syrup war. She referred to those as corn syrup sticks in our house the other day. So you must be feeling victorious today with the news that Hershey is looking at replacing the high fructose corn syrup in some of its products with sugar. By the way, I called those things, I didn't call those things Twizzlers, I called them red crudités. Will Papa, Chief Research and Development Officer at the Hershey Company, said that they use a mix of sugar and high fructose corn syrup in their products, but they are now moving more toward sugar. He said, "We take into account what consumers want, and consumers are telling us between the two they prefer sugar."
I have to say that, do you remember being in New York City before this Hershey store was open here in on Michigan Avenue,
mm-hmm.
or off Michigan Avenue? And we were in New York, and we walked into the Hershey place, and I was really excited because you know that I love chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And I started tasting. They let you taste, you know, from mm-hmm. all these bins. And I'm tasting the chocolate, and nothing tasted right. I mean, it tasted weird.
Now, and your palate is weird.
Then I asked somebody who worked there, and they said, oh, yeah, now it's all full of corn syrup.
Well, what about Coca-Cola? Coke with sugar.
I don't drink Coke.
The real
I
thing.
Know.
There's a lot of Pepsi's doing it, too. It tastes different. It tastes better. But that Hershey, the day you tasted the Hershey's products,
it
didn't taste bad to me. And I thought it's just because you have your sophisticated palate for Godiva chocolates.
No,
which I don't
corn
like.
Syrup, too. I don't like Godiva chocolate.
The high fructose corn syrup has gained a bad reputation for fueling weight gain and diabetes, although health experts say there's still not enough evidence to conclude it's any worse than regular sugar. So it's a controversial topic, and the debate goes on.
For one thing, it doesn't taste the same. I mean, if we're just going to go on taste, it does not taste the same.
Well, if you have a sophisticated palate, you can discern the difference. And, you know, that's like me with root beers and milkshakes and hot dogs. You know, I'm very particular, very fussy about things like that. On the health beat, you may have seen this story recently about some new cholesterol data and the calls for guidelines in the revisions of how much cholesterol, what the level should be, especially that LDL, the bad cholesterol, and you know, half of the world or more seems like everybody's on statins now. And
well, no, not half the world. Probably half of the United
yes,
States.
That's
not
right.
The world.
So what about that? And who should take statins? And what are you supposed to look for when you get your cholesterol checked? And then who should take statins and who shouldn't take them? And what are the side effects worth it? So many questions about this, and especially in light of this new study. And we're going to talk to a cardiologist about this coming up at 2:08. So stand by, put down your corn syrup sticks, and listen up. Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano with you today. You know, it used to be the guys would get together, go to a game, go out to dinner and, you know, we'd talk about girls and sports. Now we talk about cholesterol.
I know.
And let me tell you something. The more I read about it, the more I talk to experts about it, the more confused I am. And there's a story in the news today. Actually, it's been circulating for a while about some new cholesterol data fueling calls for guideline revisions. And so we've asked our pal, the respected cardiologist with the North Shore Medical Group, Dr. Justin Levesay, to join us. Doc, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
All right, thanks for coming on.
Let's talk about this. Reading this story here, controversial heart disease prevention guidelines that abandoned specific targets for reducing the bad LDL cholesterol are under fresh assault after a major study highlighted the benefits of reducing LDL to very low levels. What does all this mean, Doctor?
Well, you're absolutely right. The pendulum seems to swing back and forth to some extent. But there was a presentation at the American Heart Association meeting, which was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, that looked at treating people who had a heart attack or heart disease with either just a statin alone or a combination drug with a statin and a drug called Zetia. And the group on the combination pill lowered their cholesterol a lot more than the statin alone. And it was found that in those patients, over the course of follow-up, there was a 6.4% reduction in the recurrent heart attacks, deaths, strokes, hospitalizations, bypass surgery, and stents being implanted.
It's so confusing, Doctor, because we keep hearing all this conflicting information, some of which is about how you shouldn't necessarily even be as worried about that cholesterol number when it comes to your risk of having a heart attack.
I know. It's completely confusing. And you hear so many different things. I think this study and other studies like it do show one thing, that if you have established heart disease, if you've had a heart attack or a significant blockage in your coronary artery, that reducing bad cholesterol is an important thing and a good thing. And I think that's been consistently shown. You know, in terms of what you eat and dietary fat and versus refined sugars and carbohydrates and those sorts of things, there's a ton of conflicting data out there. And I think that the verdict is still out to some extent.
And what about people who haven't necessarily suffered a heart attack, but they go to the doctor and the doctor says, well, you do have a little bit of plaque. I'm hearing it on an ultrasound or whatever, but better safe than sorry, take the statins just in case.
Yeah, that's something called primary prevention. When you know someone doesn't have a diagnosis of having a blocked artery, and you know, in that circumstance, it really depends on what your risk factors are going into it. You know, if you're really a setup for having coronary disease, you know, if you have diabetes, a really strong family history of early heart attacks, then maybe kind of prophylactically taping one of these types of drugs makes sense. But for the average person who's in good health otherwise, is active, doesn't have a lot of risk factors, then, you know, just treating a number isn't necessarily the right thing to do.
Where do you come down on the issue of statins and the side effects?
Well, there are definitely side effects. It's like any, you know, most all drugs have side effects, and statins have some well-known side effects. You know, lots of people, probably the most common side effect I see with statins is people have bad muscle pain and cramps, and it's a real phenomenon. Some people just cannot take statins because it's so bad. One of the other side effects of statins is it does cause type 2 diabetes in some people, which is, you know, obviously not a good thing and is counterproductive. So some people have cognitive issues, kind of fogginess, memory loss, which fortunately resolves once you stop the statin. But these are all things that you need to be aware of if you're going to take the drug, so that if they occur, you know it's related to the drug. And the good news is that they pretty much all go away once you stop the drug.
And is there any benefit to being on a statin for a relatively short period of time and then stopping? Or if you're on it, do you have to stay on it for life?
Yeah, most of the studies looking at statins, particularly in people who have established disease, are long-term therapy. It's not generally a drug that's given and for a short period of time and then stopped.
All right. Once it's been established that you have a little bit of plaque, What can be done to get rid of it? Can you get rid of plaque by changing your diet, by exercising more, by staying away from refined sugars and processed foods?
If only. The kind of holy grail is Drano for plaque, to just melt it away.
Hmm.
And the truth of the matter is unfortunately, we don't have Drano at the moment. These drugs are incredibly effective, as are, you know, lifestyle modifications and exercise in terms of stabilizing the plaque that's there and stopping it from getting worse. But once it's there, we don't have anything that reliably shrinks it or makes it disappear.
Okay, doctor, now, you know I'm a hypochondriac, so let me preface this with that information. And I got freaked out a couple years ago when, after President Bush left office, and he, of course, was pretty much the picture of health. He was very mm-hmm. active, and he went in for some procedure, and we were told, well, it's nothing, it was minor. And then later news came that it was a little more serious than people thought. And he was not showing any symptoms of he was not having any severe chest pain or anything like that. So, you know, people like me hear about that and think, hey, what's going on? I'm feeling good. But how do I know, especially as you get older, how do I know there's not something going on that's going to be a problem? What do you do?
Sure. It is kind of scary. And there are people, you know, we talk about implicating cholesterol and causing heart disease. I see plenty of people who have heart disease and blockages who have perfectly normal cholesterol. In addition to which, we oftentimes see people who have no symptoms or very atypical symptoms. You know, we tend to think of having a heart attack or angina as being, you know, pain in the center of your chest that radiates to your left arm. That's not necessarily the case. Lots of times people either just have shortness of breath or, you know, pain in their back or shoulder or right arm. Things can, you know, have very atypical presentations. So probably the best thing to do is to have regular follow-up with your doctor. You know, certainly if you have risk factors for heart disease, your physician should, you know, be watching out for symptoms, possibly doing a stress test to kind of screen you. You know, so not to play upon your being a hypochondriac, but, you know, sometimes these things sneak up and there aren't good warning symptoms beforehand. And it's rare, but it happens. But,
and would the test be an echo stress? Is that the best one for something like that?
Well, there are different kinds of stress tests. The most sensitive stress tests for picking up a problem are a stress test with imaging, either an echo or a nuclear stress test. These stress tests, you know, not only look at your heart EKG to see if there are abnormalities, but also look at the actual heart muscle. And they're very, very sensitive for picking up problems.
You have those machines in your car, Doc. Could you come over right after the show? I want both of those immediately.
All right.
I'm on my way.
What about the studies that, you know, add to the confusion that say that, you know, that I read about all the time, saying that statins actually increase the prevalence of coronary calcification by more than 50%? I mean, are those studies true? I mean, this is from Arteriosclerosis Journal.
Yeah.
No, it's not from that journal.
No. Yeah.
That wouldn't be right.
Yeah,
no.
It is from a
doc. What would you doc say?
Atherosclerosis.
Atherosclerosis.
Yeah. Okay. Atherosclerosis Journal. The Atherosclerosis General.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to them anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we like to come up with big words to make ourselves sound smart.
Yeah,
there's
really,
no
and I sure
about
don't.
It. So, you know, coronary calcification is not necessarily you know, it can be a marker for disease, but it's in and of itself not always a problem. You know, there's a ton of conflicting data with regards to statins, particularly if you kind of get on the internet and put in statin, you're going to see, you know, everything from it's the best thing ever to it's, you know, horrible for you and it's completely unnecessary. You know, what I can say is that if you look at respected clinical trials of statins, there's a consistent benefit when it comes to statins. That doesn't mean that it should be put in the drinking water and that people should be taking it who don't have a good reason to be taking it because of the side effects we talked about and the expense. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, it really has been shown time and time again. You know, I like to call it the body count. If you take, you know, 1,000 people with heart disease and you put 500 of them on a statin and 500 of them not on a statin, wait 2 years and then count the remaining bodies, there's going to be more bodies in the group that take the statin.
Yeah.
And that's if you have established heart disease, not if it's a, what did you call it, a primary...
Primary prevention.
Primary prevention? Is that what you're saying?
There's some data in primary prevention that statins are effective at preventing heart disease, but I think, you know, really what we've seen is that the most bang for your buck in terms of preventing events is in people who either have, you know, established risk factors like diabetes or have existing heart disease.
I guess you don't always know, but wouldn't it be very unusual for any adult male or female, once you get past about, oh, say, 50 years old, to be without any plaque?
It's pretty rare. I do, you know, I've done thousands of angiograms, and to see, you know, I do see completely normal coronary arteries, but most people, you know, at the very least, have some irregularities in their coronary arteries, and they're... were actually studies done on, in the Vietnam War of you know, poor GIs who were killed and who were young in 18 to 25, and over 50% of them already had the beginnings of blockages of their coronary arteries.
And if you have some plaque, though, that might not be anything serious, though, correct?
As for most people, it's not. For most people, it's small and it doesn't obstruct the coronary artery and never leads to an event.
And since you mentioned the heart attack symptoms that are commonly known among men, we should say something about women, because their symptoms often are totally different, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that only about 50% of women present with typical symptoms when it comes to heart disease, which wasn't, you know, well appreciated until the last 15 years or so. And women tend to present, you know, more with shortness of breath, you know, pain in their back or areas, you know, with inspiration. So kind of atypical symptoms. So, you know, whenever I'm evaluating a woman, it's on my radar screen that I need to not be thinking in the traditional kind of way.
All right, I'll give you a health tip. It's more of a mental health tip, Dr. Levesay. If you ever run into me at a holiday party, run the other way, because you'll be bothered with endless questions and you won't be able to shake me.
All right. Well,
thank you so much.
Yeah. Dr. Justin Levesay from the North Shore Medical Group, as always, our thanks, and have a good holiday season, a healthy
right,
one.
Thanks so much. You too.
As long as we're talking about health studies today, I wanted to mention something about this. Ever yell at your kid because he or she is doing homework and also on the phone or playing a video game or looking at some screen that has nothing to do with the homework? Well, they did a study recently of 400 adolescents, and in the study, they were tasked with completing basic tests in one of two rooms. The first room was free of distractions, but participants in the second room were required to listen to music. They were also told that they could do anything.
Any music?
Yep, and they could do anything they wanted on their phones and computers, and that they should expect an email and should quickly answer it in that room. Now, most people did better in the room where they were allowed to focus on just the testing, but about 15% of those tested who classified themselves as frequent multitaskers actually did better when they had email and music to focus on as well as the task at hand. Pretty interesting, huh? So some teens do focus better amid distractions. Now, which classification your child falls in,
yeah,
not sure.
It just seems hard to believe, doesn't it, that with a distraction.
I cannot read the paper. I very rarely, well, a book I'll read, like, you know, at night in bed with nothing else going on. But when I'm reading the papers, and I go through a lot of newspapers, I'm old school, you know. I enjoy having something on in the background. I really do. It seems like I'm just less antsy. I can actually focus better when something else is going on. Now, you, Marianne, you have a bad problem with any noise. You are not, and I hate it when our daughter sort of, I see her taking after you. She, like, we're in the car, we're going somewhere, and I'll say, you know, bring a book, bring your homework. And she'll say, well, you know, I can't because if you're listening to the radio. And I say, you mean you need complete silence? I mean, the world is a noisy place. You've got to learn to
it's not a matter
multitask
of
to some degree, or you've got to learn to be able to do things with some distractions going on in the background.
I don't think so. I think that people are wired differently.
Well, like, it's how you were raised, too, what happened when you were a child.
But I don't think so, because when I have three brothers, and I could not – I moved out of the house because of the noise. Pretty much. Mm-hmm. And they are not like that. And we were all raised together.
Well, that's true.
I think that you people are wired in a different way. I can't read a book if you've got the obnoxious show with the laugh track going. Like, it's very distracting to me. I can't. I can't even read my computer.
Objection, Your Honor. the show Marianne is referring to is a Seinfeld episode I was watching last night. That show is filmed before a live audience. There is no laugh track. Objections! Objections sustained.
It was not even Seinfeld.
The jury is instructed to disregard that testimony.
It was a black and white show.
Last night?
No, just many nights.
But that was Naked City. That's not a comedy.
Whatever it is.
Objection, Your Honor. A witness is bringing up completely irrelevant and incorrect testimony. Objection sustained. By the way, the study I was just talking about teens and distractions, the folks who did the study acknowledge that this really can't tell us anything about brain development yet, but it shows you how little we know about the human brain, and they want to learn why some people seem adapted to high frequency attention switching. They believe that some adolescent brains may be developing differently to cope with all the stimuli of the digital world. Isn't that interesting?
Not to be like Seinfeld talking about how he thought that he was on the autism spectrum lately,
right,
and then he got bashed for it.
Yeah.
But I do have to say that maybe I'm on the ADD spectrum, because
yeah, you are.
If I'm in the car with you and I'm trying to talk with you,
yeah,
and the radio is on, no matter what it is, I feel like somebody is throwing rocks at my head.
See, you need help.
I do.
You need help, but I swear, Marianne will be on the phone. I've got the radio turned down so low I can't even hear it, but she needs it completely off. See, that's not normal. And so does our daughter, which is really frightening me now, because now I got Marianne and Marianne Jr.
Marianne's Celebrity Report to the Nation is on the air.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Bill Curtis. Here we go into the Celebrity Newsroom for today's names in the news.
So many names in the news, but we start off with Bill Cosby again. The first civil lawsuit against him has been filed. Judy Huff filed a complaint yesterday alleging sexual battery, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and negligent infliction of emotional distress for the rape incident that allegedly occurred in 1974 when she was 15 years old.
They say this is going to get settled out of court, as most of them do.
Let's see. And then there's a story that is super interesting today that is from a male model named Tony Hogue, saying that he saved his friend from Bill Cosby. His friend was 23 years old, and this was back in 1984, September of 1984. And apparently he was banging furiously on the front door of Bill Cosby's Upper East Side brownstone because he had received a call from her whispering, saying, "Get me out of here. Help me. I found myself," you know, she said that she was not wearing her clothes, that she was really groggy, and that Bill Cosby kept coming in. She couldn't stand up, and her clothes were all disheveled. That's an interesting story. And then Bill Cosby is breaking his Twitter silence to thank his defenders, who are Whoopi Goldberg and Jill Scott.
Yeah, so, that's about the only two left.
Yeah.
Clarence Page had a good article, a good column in the Tribune today on Bill Cosby. And basically, you know, he's saying that the reason for this big fall is because he was up on the big pedestal. But it's a very interesting piece in the Trib today.
I will read that. Lady Gaga was on the Howard Stern show yesterday, and she revealed that she was raped at age 19, not by Bill Cosby, though.
No, she was the one who wasn't.
Yes. We actually heard this interview, Bob, you and I did, as when we were driving home. She started off explaining why she wrote the song Swine about sexual violence. And she says the story is about rape. It's about demoralization. It's about rage, fury, and passion. And she told Howard that she had a lot of pain that she wanted to release. And then she talked about this incident that happened when she was 19 years old, and she was just getting started in her music career. And it was some guy who, reportedly, supposedly was going to help her. And after the assault happened, she says that she didn't want to talk about it to anybody, not even to her parents, to nobody, because she did not want to be defined by it. And she said, I'll be damned if somebody's going to say that every creatively intelligent thing that I ever did boiled down to this one, you know, profane word she used, who did that to me. And so she said that she had to have a lot of time elapsing and therapy in order to be able to deal with this, and that, you know, she feels that now she's fine, but she turned to drugs and alcohol just to ease the pain.
Yeah, the story about the woman suing Cosby now, who claims she was sexually assaulted when she was 15, a lot of people say, well, how come now? I think this woman is now like in her mid-50s. How come now you come forward? And that's what they're saying about a lot of these women. But as is the case with Lady Gaga, for various reasons, you don't realize everything that's happening to you because of that, all the effects. And number two, you're embarrassed.
It's embarrassing.
And you feel like
you caused it?
Yes. And so for so many victims, it is something that is kind of swept under the rug. And that, unfortunately, is all too common.
Yeah, it certainly is. Nancy Snyderman was on the Today Show this morning, once again trying to apologize for breaking her Ebola quarantine. Now, she was under quarantine and broke it for a restaurant run, yeah, as you'll recall.
She got hungry. Crew probably got hungry. A camera guy probably got hungry. And they, Doc, can you go out and get me a hamburger? But I have Ebola, maybe. Don't worry about it. Just use some Purell.
She said she was sorry for, quote, adding to the confusion about Ebola. Though people are saying she was just actually confused about the word quarantine.
Yeah, but she was confused.
She was on, you know, I saw this on the Today Show today. And she feels very strongly about going back and helping out. And, you know, she was explaining how she was caught between being a journalist and being a
hungry
reporter. No, not about that, but just, you know, while she was there. And she was just trying to explain herself away. But that's got to be hard.
Well, I thought she said that it was a mistake, didn't
she? Yeah,
she
did.
A while
but
back?
She's
yeah.
been apologizing for it. And she was on with Matt Lauer again today talking about it.
Was it Chris Rock who was on with them the other day and caused a bit of a disturbance when he started talking about how they were in the ratings war, and ABC and Good Morning America, they had tremendous ratings during the time of Robin Roberts' illness. And then Chris Rock said to Matt Lauer, I hear words to the effect of, "Yo, Matt, are you going to get sick now to, you know, get the numbers up on your show?" And so many people were very offended. But, you know, as usual, Chris Rock,
he offends everybody.
Well, he equally. His comedy always has a little nugget of truth from which it springs.
Yeah, he's so funny.
And okay. Smart.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So here's what happened yesterday. Mariah Carey, who was getting ready to tape a segment for her appearance tonight of the Christmas tree lighting ceremony at Rockefeller Center, she was more than 3 hours late.
No, she's a diva.
Exactly. Supposedly, she was talking with her lawyer about the divorce settlement with her husband, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she finally showed up, the NBC officials sent her packing. But then they had a change of heart, and they're now rolling the dice that she will show up tonight. So, meanwhile...
Some of it is pre-taped and some of it is live.
Exactly, yeah. Meanwhile, Leanne Rimes tweeted that she would have more airtime, insinuating that it was because of the Mariah problem.
All right, just one big happy family there at NBC.
All right, Time Magazine's list of the 15 most influential fictional characters of 2014 lists number one, Elsa from Frozen, number two, Kim Kardashian. But they're not saying that she's a fictional character. It's actually from her game.
Number three, Pete McMurray's producer, Scott Miller. Oops, I'm not supposed to say he's a fictional character. Pete does that voice so well. And I think Pete, many, many years ago, traveled the country playing various small clubs and minstrel shows with his ventriloquist act. And he had a dummy, Scott. And he did that voice, and now he continues to do that at night here. He's not on tonight, is he? No, the Blackhawks are on tonight. But you listen tomorrow night, and you tell me, did you ever hear Pete and Scott talking at the same time?
I don't think so. Together.
I don't think so. Well, that's just, you know, they do that with the computer.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to
It's lonely here at night. You got to create a character.
That's right.
Yeah, and Pete does the voice very well. He does voices.
I'm sure Scott Miller will be thanking you for that later today. All right, so moving on. This is such a funny picture. Ariana Grande was performing with the Victoria's Secret fashion show. She was performing her hit song, Bang Bang, when in the middle of this dance or whatever it was, she gets bashed in the face with an angel wing because... one of the Victoria's Secret models was wearing one. And the picture is so hilarious that I'm going to post it on our Facebook page. You have to see it. It's so cute.
Yeah.
She had a sense of humor about it. Now, the movie that we just saw, Bob, The Theory of Everything, Stephen Hawking's ex-wife, Jane Wild Hawking, whose book was the inspiration for this movie, she forbade sex scenes in the movie, even though the director really wanted to include some sex scenes.
Well, they alluded to it, and the kids keep popping up in the story.
Yes, but the director, James Marsh, says, we were very interested in exploring with our actors, and we talked about it, and we're sort of keen to do it.
No, they didn't have to do it.
Yeah, to explain.
It was good that they didn't.
He had an interest in depicting what sex would look like for somebody
ALS. That's why they put that one bit of dialogue in there where one of Hawking's college friends is kind of asking him about the sex drive and so forth. And Hawking says something like, that's involuntary, has nothing to do with the brain.
But that's as far as they went.
And then the line after that was, well, that explains a lot about men.
Yes.
One of my favorite lines in the movie.
Yeah, I know. You were like elbowing me.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And finally.
Finally what?
Finally, we have to get into the mailbox.
All right, so I'll leave you with a few seconds of this very funny mashing together of 12 of this year's hottest hits. All right, YouTube and Vine stars do this. They're called Us the Duo. They do. You're shaking your head.
I don't understand what you're telling me. These are hit songs.
Okay. The hit songs of the year are done by these two stars,
YouTube stars
from YouTube and Vine, called Us the Duo, and they do a mashup of all these songs. And this is what kids are listening to.
All right, let's hear it.
And you give me hope.
shake, 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 shake. Yeah, it's wonderful. This is what's hot online now.
Yeah, I'm going to post it on our Facebook page that you can hear it. They do the whole, you know, 12 songs.
12 songs? What songs, though?
Like I just said,
has anybody heard of these songs? What hit song? Hit songs from YouTube?
No, they're hit songs from 2014. I know you're not familiar with any of them.
No, I am.
Because we have to listen to the Elvis Presley show when you're in the car. These are hit songs from this year.
Yeah, that's the Celebrity Report to the Nation. Hey, I was listening to the Elvis channel the other night.
Yes, and, I know.
George Klein's show from Graceland. And he mentioned me, gave me a shout out.
That was amazing.
Do not knock the Elvis channels. Your message is now the Sarat and Marciano mailbox, open for business. And on the email, here's one from Michelle. Hi, I've tried to find the answer on the WGN website with no luck. A coworker was telling me about a guest you had on, wrote a book regarding the workplace, making employees happy and the proper way to run a company. Could you please email me the name of the book and the author? Thanks in advance for your help. Well, we'll do better than that. I'll tell you right here. It was the book by Dr. Ron Friedman, The Best Place to Work, The Psychology Behind Extraordinary Workplaces. We'll email you as well. Thank you, Michelle. And this from Peggy. Oh, this is because we were talking about getting off our devices and the importance of face-to-face communication. And Peggy emails us, check out the first chapter in The Outliers. You read that book, didn't you, Marianne?
I love that book.
First chapter, very interesting study on an Italian immigrant community in Pennsylvania. Great health and all because of community. Did you remember that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That is just one awesome book. I love it. I want to read it again, actually. All right. Texts 847 says, thank you. I thought the same thing every time I hear Ashton Carter. We were saying, but we both were thinking of Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
Because how many Ashtons do you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not many.
With the K sound at the beginning of the second name.
That's
too.
Right. 708 says, talk about impulse buying. That's what we were talking about, Bob. Just bought the Genucel cream. I am female, and no, I am not drinking yet. Because there's this.
Well, you look marvelous.
There's a study that says that men are impulse buyers, especially when they're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
We had so much feedback on this thing about this. The subject is noise while you're working or not. 224 says, I always had the radio on as I did homework as a kid. Still at 60, I do better with background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And 847 says, my driver's ed teacher always had us turn on the radio before starting the car. He said we would have more focus on driving with the radio on.
There you go. See?
And 708 says, amen. My daughter and I are the same way. Everything has to be off for me to concentrate on anything. I've tried to change it, but I don't remember a thing I read.
That's you, Marianne.
It's true. And 630 says, kids who need complete silence will always fail. There is always so much noise in their classrooms that unless they can tune it out and tune in only to the instructor, they will invariably tune out everything. So sorry for kids in public school.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's a noisy world. You got to learn how to cope.
And 847 says, please tell Marianne she may have misophonia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you
I
do
think
have that.
I do.
It's literally the hatred of sound, a neurological disorder.
Too bad I work in radio.
We really appreciate you being with us on the radio. Thank
yes,
you.
We do.
See you tomorrow at noon. Here comes Bill and Wendy.
Bob, Marianne, Wendy and I were polishing off a little tray of crudites. Would either of you like one?
You mean crudites?
Yeah, crudites. Would you like any?
Well, did you know?
Yeah, it's crudite.
Crudite. Yeah, we didn't. Obviously.
I took French.
I took Spanish.
I took French also.
Los
well, then
crudites.
How could you not know that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Well.
Do you say Calagna, too?
Yeah, I say Calagna.
Yeah.
You smell good. What kind of Calagna you wear? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You say Calagna. I say Bologna.
Bologna. Bologna. Give me a bologna sandwich.
It tastes better when you're wearing a beret hat, doesn't it? I don't know why. It just does. It tastes so much better.
Yeah. A fillet of fish tastes really good, too.
Oh, a fillet of fish? Ask for
that. I have heard people say fillets, though. I really have.
I've heard that, too. Mm-hmm.
So I would like
it's incorrect.
Mm. Well, no, I think they're two different things.
No. A fillet of fish?
I've heard fillet. We should ask Chef Hans. We should get him on.
We should ask Chef Hans.
Although
or Jonathan Toews of the Blackhawks.
Wait, but Chef Hans, isn't he like...
Shouldn't C-R-U-D-I-T-E-S have a little thingy over the
A mark on there?
Yeah.
An umlaut. Ask Brett Favre about that.
I just saw that movie again recently, the classic, The Time Machine with Rod Taylor, where he battles the umlauts.
Yes.
Oh, man, that is a great
movie. I thought you were going to
say there's something about Mary.
The umlauts versus the Cruddites. There's your movie.
That's what's going to happen in the future.
Wow. I like that.
All right, we better stop now.
Why, it's fun. We were just having fun.
All right, well, let's keep going.
No, we're done.
But Wendy and I will mispronounce things for the next 4 hours just to keep it fresh.
Keep it going.
Yeah.
Keep the continuity.
Sure.
I have a good one, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.